Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to today's chapter of the Big Picture Show here live on Radio Islam International. I'm your host for today, Mustafa Nasser. Well, we started the show in a bit of a different format. I came across this morning this clip by Agnes Callamard, who was interviewed by Democracy Now. She is the Secretary General of Amnesty International. And when I was hearing it this morning, and I'm hearing the tone and the language that she was using to show that it's come to a point whereby the NGOs, the leading NGOs of the world, and human society in general, are fed up, frustrated, and angry, and very angry about what's happening in Gaza at this moment in time, to the point whereby her report shows that there's total disregard for international law, to the point it's reached the stage of breakdown. And she's called out all the culprits, the big players, the United States, especially on the matter of Israel and Gaza and how they covered enough for Israel. And of course, she's touched on other things like Russia over the Ukraine story. And just as the clip was fading out because of time constraints, she was talking about Myanmar, which is, we all know, responsible for what they're doing to the Rohingya, protected by China. So all powers are abusing their powers to the detriment of society. Nevertheless, dear listeners, I have our brother A.B. Dalji on the line. He's currently in Pakistan, making maja there. Brother A.B., assalamu alaikum, how are you?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Things are wonderful. I can just describe it in that one word you used just now. The word is maja. And just to quote your friend George Bush, the small fella, the shrub, it's all shock and awe. Scenery is absolutely mind-blowing. We are traveling along a long, winding road out of side. Very long drive. And there's a deep canyon. I can tell you one thing, Habibi. It has made me very, very holy indeed. Expecting my end to come at the very next bend in the road. And
all right.
If you can hear me. Right, if you can hear me, let me just tell you, in 320-seater coasters, that's small buses, and we have expert drivers speeding along, avoiding the rock falls and landslides and so on. It's pure adrenaline-pumping adventure. And all 42 in my group, Habibi, we arrived in Islamabad, a lovely...
Hello, AB. I think we seem to be losing you there, maybe because of the way the terrain and the territory, or maybe signal issues. Can you hear us now? Okay, I think our brother at the studio, I think let's just cut brother AB off until we get him at a better moment in time, and we'll try and reconnect to him. Are we okay with that? Okay, for dear listeners, unfortunately, as you heard what AB, he is there driving somewhere along some interesting terrain, very scenic terrain, and I'm sure you've seen in those pictures of Pakistan, of those mountain hillside, those roads there that are carved out in the mountain passes, and I'm sure he's on one of those, as you said, adrenaline rush, and you're in saying, hey, wait a minute, we're on edge. And if you look to one side, you see, okay, you just see rock. And if you look to the other side, well, you see hundreds of meters going down. And I'm sure the what comes to a person's mind is one of...
I can hear you.
Sorry, AB, you back?
Yeah. I don't know where... Okay. I was just talking to myself there for a minute. Where did I leave off?
No. And I think I was talking to myself because I was trying to... explain that, you know, maybe on the terrain that you're driving. So basically, Amy, can I ask you, we see in some of these pictures of these mountain pass, those roads going through the mountain, on the side of the mountains, like they cut out, and it's literally like, you know, it's that two lanes or even that one, you know, how these drivers have to maneuver those routes and things like that. Are you on one of those?
Yes, winding roads cut into the mountains. and deep canyon on the one side, as I said, made me extremely holy, Mustafa. And I expected my end to come at the very next bend in the road. We've got three 20-seater coasters, which are small buses, and these drivers, as you just said now, they are experts speeding along and avoiding the rock falls and the landslides and so on. And if you heard me already, I said it's pure adrenaline-pumping adventure. Now, all 42 in my group, we all arrived in Islamabad. If you just say yes, then I know that you are still there. Mustafa, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yes, you were here.
Right. All right. Okay, so this Islamabad is a relatively new city, just about 50 years old, with beautiful manicured gardens and parks and that majestic, beautiful, iconic masjid, the spectacular Faisal Masjid. It was an awe-inspiring visit, and we're greatly honored by the arrival of the Grand Mufti of Pakistan, Professor Dr. Muhammad Ilyas, who specially came to meet our group, and he addressed us. Are you still there?
Yeah, we are.
All right. So he addressed us and expressed his great appreciation for the stance taken by South Africa in taking Israel to the ICJ. Now, about the tour itself, as you know, Mustafa, it's not often that I'm speechless, but I have no words to really describe northern Pakistan where we are. I would say it's Switzerland 10 times over. And as far as the weather is concerned, because we have all these buzruks in our bus here, we are blessed with excellent weather, alhamdulillah, ranging between 20 to 25 degrees during the day and a bit cool in the evening. And then we are passing through extremely deep valleys with gushing streams and rivers and moving through ancient villages where, as we pass through, beautiful little children are smiling and waving at us. Amazing sight. And you know what really surprised everyone was the resorts that we see there. Absolutely fabulous. For example, the Shangri-La Resort. It's built around a beautiful lake, and I would say that it's a delight for honeymooners. The level of service, of course, and the food and everything is of a very high level. Our brothers here told me that their biggest problem has been lowering of gazes, but I won't go into that subject at the moment. The people are very warm and welcoming. This is a really amazing, eye-opening experience beyond my own and the group's expectation. And they've been sending videos and photographs to their friends and relatives back home. And the question everybody's been asked from their relatives is, where are you? And when they say it's Pakistan, they really can't believe it. And they would like to visit. So here's a quick advert. The next tour is in September, inshallah. And also, I want to convey the salams of the groups to all the relatives and friends back home. And I just want to ask the group, what do you think of the tour, everyone? Well, there you have it, Mustafa. Maja is the word.
Okay, we jazakallah for that. We look forward to it.
A special greeting, Mustafa, a special greeting from Salim Umar, your dear friend. He sends salams to you.
I was about to say, give me my salams. And look at that. Jazakallah, walaikum salam. And inshallah, when you guys return, I will like to get a full account. And all the best to you guys. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Jazakallah. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, there you go, dear listeners. You heard AB's overview over what's happening there in Pakistan. And in fact, interesting enough, for the past couple of years, when you've been going on YouTube, you've been seeing travel vloggers from the western parts of the world all falling in love with Pakistan. And of course, there would have been the best time would have been to visit would have been when Imran Khan was around office. But nevertheless, and there was that fear that after he was ousted, that, you know, should we go to Pakistan? A lot of people I know were hesitant. But nevertheless, as you can see, AB Dauji is there with 42 people, and they joined themselves. And like going to another place, for example, I was last week I spoke about going to Aqsa, a land that's under occupation, under heavy military control, yet we visit and make the most of it. So at the end of the day, if one has to be limited by who's in office or who's in power, then I guess you're not going to go anywhere. So let's see, whoever wants to go in September, well, start making your applications to Brother AB. Okay, dear listeners, as we said, that the clip, I felt that was very important, because when I heard it early this morning, I was actually taken back by the level of frustration and anger by the global NGOs. And I mean, you take in Amnesty International, which is a leading human rights group, and Agnes Callamard is no stranger to when it comes to being on principle or stuck on principles of human rights violations. Yes, people will criticize her for this or for that. For example, when she was coming down over hard on Putin over what's been happening in Ukraine, but they said, oh, maybe she's an American puppet. No, she's not an American puppet. That's where people are wrong. Because if you heard this clip and you heard her now on this program, she's calling out the Americans and saying, but wait a minute, what you guys are doing is wrong. It's complicit. You guys are actually allowing this genocide to take place. You are equally guilty or culpable, right? And said that, and the word that she used to describe what's happening with Gaza, with the crimes committed by Israel, is unprecedented. She says, what we're seeing now has been unprecedented in history. That means since World War II, what we see is, it's shocking. I mean, this discovery of this mass grave of the healthcare workers handcuffed and bound and then been brutalized and murdered, and then, you know, hidden away in mass graves, thinking that nobody's going to find them. Just the other week, we had, of course, what was a high profile on the NGOs being attacked. I mean, there's journalists, etc. So, and I want to post it on Facebook and share it on social media, and I want people to listen to the clip again and digest the contents there. But what we've seen is that, of course, we've seen it currently now in the United States, especially this week, started off with the Columbia University and it spread like wildfire, whereby universities now have reached a point of boiling point. We know that in our own history here in South Africa, and today being the 27th of April, 2024, marking 30 years since the dawn of democracy 30 years ago in 1994, and I still remember that day very well. I was 20 at the time, and I went to cast my first vote. My late father told me, you're very fortunate. He says, look, I'm now close to 60, and this is the first time I'm getting to vote. So we're looking at the situation again, that we've come to this freedom that we are here enjoying. And now you've got the rest of the world going through these problems, and I mean major problems. And the Americans are carrying on like, you know, when I say the Americans, we have to be very distinct. We're talking about the American establishment, the government. They are carrying on as if there's nothing going wrong, yet they know full well what's going wrong. And the American public, yes, by and large, you find them to be gullible. One would say stupid as well, because of they think the world is America. But they are not stupid. They are waking up. And of course, that's why they're mobilizing at the universities. And when I come to the universities, as I said, talking in the South African context, it was the movement at universities over the decades that led to the fall of apartheid. It was those that were rising up. So universities, when it comes to student mobilization at universities, it plays a major role in combating problems that are taking place. And these are the things that we need to know about. Like, for example, the UDF. The UDF was very big in the early 80s, from the 70s, actually, at the former University of Durban-Westville, known as UDW, which is now UKZN-Westville campus. Right? And then, of course, they were the UDF formations were all over. So like that, looking at what the universities in America are doing right now when it comes to highlighting the crimes that are committed in Gaza, the genocide, and of course, you can see how the authorities are being manipulated and used in order to thwart and crash down those protest movements and efforts. And this is all because APAC, the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, which is the most dangerous and the most evil institution in the world, being a lobbying institution, is using every trick in the book and power at the disposal in order to use the authorities to do what they want. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to Israel, Israel can never be criticized. Remember something, the narrative, Israel never does wrong. Israel cannot do any wrong. And we know that narrative can be extended to other countries in other situations in different contexts. But if we're looking at this whole thing about Israel being this medical state and that it's been a bastion of democracy, it's been an icon of democracy, it's been the so-called only democracy in the Middle East, it's not the only democracy in the Middle East, that's a lie. Because technically speaking, Lebanon is a democracy, Turkey is a democracy. You got countries in the Maghreb that try to embrace democracy, although they've got far right wing governments. You take like Tunisia, Iran is a democracy, although it's a theocracy, but they have a democratically elected government. Whether those that are out there like the government or not, that's a different story. But the fact remains. So this whole nonsense about Israel being the only democracy in the Middle East is a big fat lie. Moving on to other matters, well, looking at what's happening, if you've been monitoring also away from Gaza, although Gaza takes the center stage of attention, and for the good reasons too, is that we having elections taking place in India right now over a month period. Our elections are going to be on one day, on the 29th of May. India has the elections over a month, actually it's over a 5-week period, and they have them, you know, in different zones or states, and this has been always the case because of the massive population. But what has surfaced has been disturbing political rallying and canvassing, etc., by Modi himself. For the first time in a long time, have you seen Modi coming out publicly speaking about Muslims and speaking ill about Muslims. You must remember something. Modi has always played, since he came into office in 2014 until now, recently, so in the past, say, 10 years, since he's come into office, he's been very cautious and very cunning and careful in not mentioning Muslims directly. He had enough of his goons and chamchas and thugs around him to do the dirty work, whether it was Amit Shah, whether it was the various chief ministers or the various regional leaders. He had enough of those doing the swearing the Musalman. You know, the biggest swear word for the BJP are the Musalman. But this week, when that one rally that he had came out public, whereby he mentioned the Musalman openly and, you know, blatantly saying that Muslims, the Congress, referring to the Congress party, of how useless they were, that they gave privileges to the Muslims to basically dominate and manipulate the country. And that was totally wrong. In fact, it's come to a point whereby he's even been reported to the Electoral Commission, to the state authorities, what will happen, or if anything comes out of that, there's another story. But this is what you see Modi doing. And this is bad. Because even in the past, but you know, people will tell you, even those that were, I'm talking Muslim people who are in awe about what's happening with India and how India is developing and progressing. And, you know, what they say, but, you know, since with the current government under Modi, this has come about, that has come about, airports, highways, cities are getting cleaned up, etc., well and good. But they say, the same people are saying, but you don't see Modi saying anything about, he won't mention inside anything against Muslims personally. I said, yes, he doesn't have to. He really doesn't have to. He's got enough people doing the dirty work. That's the trait of a shrewd, cunning, manipulative politician. He doesn't have to say it. He's got his people doing it, and they will cause the damage that the desired outcomes are showing. And then the other thing is that there was this clip going around of the Oxford debates. We all know about the Oxford debates have been going around over the years. One of the most popular Oxford debates, and this made Mehdi Hassan popular, was when he rattled against those who are Islamophobic, etc., or painting all Muslims with the terrorist brush. Right now at the Oxford debate, a clip has been going viral of this lady, of this popular India media personality, first with VEON News, now she's with First Post, and it turns out her husband is with NDTV, Palki Sharma. And I've been telling people, do not get carried away with Palki Sharma. She's a propagandist. She's got a good command of the English language. She knows she's a good speaker. She's an orator. She knows how to captivate her audience. She knows how to get the message across. And if you hear on this Oxford debate, she starts off about these two fruit and veg vendors on the way to Delhi Airport, and how both of them have got QR codes displayed at their vending stalls, and that everybody who was coming to buy from them was taking their phones and scanning the QR code, trying to say how electronic banking has benefited the downtrodden poor working class of India. This is what she calls progress of India. And then they talk about how many people got gas supplied to the house. At the moment, this is how the BJP works. And it's not just the BJP. You have to look at who's the parents of the BJP, the RSS. They have perfected the campaign of PR. Just like how the Israelis and the Zionists do it, the BJP and RSS are doing it exactly the same way. Basically, it's like parallel. Just that you must remember something. When it comes to the BJP, RSS, they've got the numbers on this side. Yes, the Israelis and Zionists also have numbers. Of course, if you look at the Jewish Zionist population of the world, which is a small number, they have got numbers of non-Zionists, of non-Jews, etc., generally from the white man world, if one wants to put it that way, in inverted commas, doing their PR bidding. Now, in India, on the other hand, if you just look at within Indians itself, it runs into the hundreds of millions. Not just millions, but the hundreds of millions. And that's the stark comparison. Just as I said, the way Israel markets itself to whitewash all its crimes, to make itself look as this iconic only democracy, so-called only democracy of the Middle East, to be this successful country that came out of nowhere, that came to this empty land where there was nothing, which was a big fat lie. And today it's become this technological hub, right? I'll come to the sad reality of Tel Aviv just now. The same way, that's how India under the BJP RSS are marketing themselves. And they got the people to do their bidding. And this, whoever got carried away with this Palki Sharma clip, really, when I was looking at some of the comments going on certain WhatsApp chat groups, people were saying, but this is how India has progressed. I said, hold on, wait a minute. What nonsense are you talking? Yes, there will be progress because the whole world is progressing technologically, especially in what we call the era of the fourth industrial revolution. Going on to the fifth industrial revolution is not unique to India. Here in South Africa, crime aside, load shedding aside, breakdown infrastructure aside, you have people who are also accessible to certain things because of the benefits of the fourth industrial revolution, as I said, bordering on what we're going on to the fifth industrial revolution. Therefore, I cannot understand why people are in awe. You're saying that this is the successes of the BJP government, trying to make it seem that, you see, elections are coming. In other words, vote for the BJP because the BJP is where you will go forward with this. where India will take you forward, trying to say that Indians today are no more ashamed of carrying an Indian passport. In fact, when they land in London, when they come, they stand confident in the queue holding their Indian passport. Well and good. Nobody asked Indians to be ashamed. So you see that sort of rhetoric and language they were talking about. Now coming about what I was saying, I was going to talk about Tel Aviv just now. If one notices, whoever has been to Aqsa to occupy Palestine will note that, or will only see Tel Aviv if they land in Tel Aviv at the airport and go towards Masjid al-Aqsa, and then of course returning towards the airport to take their flight back home. And that too, you'll see the dots of the skyline, a very impressive skyline. Those that go through Jordan and the land border, if you don't go beyond Jerusalem, you won't see Tel Aviv. Now, I happen to drive past Tel Aviv. It is a mini Dubai. It is a high-tech, world-class international city. You've got these towers everywhere, first-class, first-world infrastructure, be it whether it's railway system, railway network, name it, top highways, clean, modern, right? But there's one downside to it. You'll see the signage on the highways, Tel Aviv hyphen Yafo. Yafo was Yaffa, which was the original name of the place before occupation. So when you drive, you'll see the signage saying Tel Aviv Yafo. Then, you, of course, as you approach the city limits or as you come to the CBD limits, then you get Tel Aviv proper, and then you go to Yafo. So this is how the makeup is. In Yafo, majority of the people are Muslim. You've got Christians and some Jews. In Tel Aviv, in this world-class, high-tech, modern city, which is a mini Dubai, of towering skyscrapers coming to the promenade of a lovely promenade, like how you have, of course, of a Durban promenade or the Sea Point promenade, or of that of any other major city around the world. Okay, unfortunately, and this is the reality, my friends, that it's exclusively for Jewish people. Not that any Muslim cannot stay there, but it is a city that they, if you stay there as a Muslim, especially with your wife who's in hijab, etc., you stand out like a sore thumb. And you'll be looked upon, you'll be frowned upon, you'll be feeling uncomfortable. That's the reality. They have one major masjid in the city, which they've preserved, which they want to show the world. You see, we're a multi-religious, multicultural society. We tolerate other religions, well and good. That masjid serves the purpose of those workers who come in the city during the day to do their work and leave by the evening. So, of course, when they have their salah times, they can use the masjid, Friday, Jummah, etc., on a need-to basis. That's what it is there for. But this is the reality. So when I see this video clips coming to the whole thing, when I see these programs and talks and the Palki Shamas and these characters, etc., going on and going about how majestic and how they've progressed their society, is all a farce, because that's all to cover up, that's all to camouflage, all that glitz and glamour is to camouflage the reality of what they're doing in their home countries, and that is persecuting minorities and others in the name of religion and bigotry and hatred. That's all we have to time for, dear listeners. For those on Radio Al Ansar, today there wasn't anything because they're having a live broadcast and there's nothing after 12 today. So until next week, inshallah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.